Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Matt Merrims is an indie creative who has over two decades of experience as a musician, actor, director, theatre sports enthusiast, and independent filmmaker. His latest film, Residence, is a bloody zombie comedy that sees Australia inflicted by a brain-eating parasite that turns its hosts into mindless zombies that wander the countryside looking for their next victim. It's also a biting satire about the consumerist world we live in, asking whether it's the mind-sapping parasites that have turned us into mindless beings, or whether it's our reliance on technology and automation that has sucked our engagement levels down to zero. In the following interview, which has been edited for length purposes, Matt talks about his journey into filmmaking, what his drive is as an indie filmmaker, and what it means to be able to work with a huge cast of emerging talent, some of whom share the screen with industry legends like Ian Smith and Don Bridges. Matt gets open and honest about the difficulties of releasing a film in today's landscape, how to engage with audiences, and much more. Residence will roll out around Australia this year, so keep an eye out on their Instagram page for more details. I'll stick a link in the show notes. If you want to find out more about what we do at The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and you have the means to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to support our work from as little as $1 a month. Throughout this interview, you will hear clips from the trailer for Residence. Here is the first one, followed by my chat with Matt.
Get away from the hustle and the bustle. Come on down to your olden days castle. No one else knows that. That'll take control of your brain and use you as a puppet.
Oh, just a little bit of positivity, please.
I'm positive that we're all fucked.
Time to suck off some zombies.
I guess I want to start off talking about your interest in filmmaking to begin with, because you've done a lot of shorts, and the path to getting to features is really hard for independent filmmakers. But I'm curious if you can talk about what got you into wanting to make films to begin with.
I remember it was in the year 2000. Like, I'd written heaps of feature scripts, and I was ready to do one, and I just thought short films for all young filmmakers, short films, hone your skill, find your voice, you know, and I just thought I wasn't ready to do one. And I've done a shitload of short films that have done really well in festivals. I'm very proud of them. And I've done so much community theatre that I'm on stage with credible actors. So I'm very lucky. I just go, okay, would you like to, you know, anyway. So I think where it all started, Andrew, was seeing Star Wars in the theatre, like when I was really young, and just go, the fuck is this? Is this a documentary? Is this real? What the hell is it? And just that magic. And it's like, wow, the way it made me feel. And then from there, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then all the sci-fi, the Star Wars ripoffs, you know, it's Krull and Ice Pirates. And I love Krull, by the way. You know, Flash Gordon and, you know, Enemy Mine, all those great sci-fi. And it wasn't until Barton Fink in 91 where I just thought, what is this? This writing is incredible. Michael Lerner, just bang, 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 rapid fire. Just, you know, it's, I got a spot, soft spot to that. I love that. But that kind of changed my mind in writing. And then at school in 91, I made a horror film that I had to do an English communication project. And I thought, well, how about I make a little film? Made a horror film. The whole, you know, class loved it, and it got around, and I just thought, this is what I want to do. So friends all through the 90s, we made 20-minute film called The Breed, and then we had the making of it and the big awards, and it was Black Tie. We used to have it down in Mount Eliza where I grew up, down south of Melbourne. And I just loved it, and I was good at it, and I loved acting, and then it just kept going, and the television pilots, and just kept creating. And that's what you got to do, just keep going. you know, and you'll find a way, and you'll find your crew. And I think with all that, with filmmaking, it's that support system. If you've got people behind you that believe in you 100%, it's going to be a lot easier than having no one, I guess. But I always had that, you know, family, my family, my sister, you know. And
you know, a lot of what you're talking about is that electricity or the energy of being able to see yourself on screen and being able to be part of something creative and getting to see it from conception to end result and watching in the cinema or at a film festival or whatever with the family and friends or the crew, the people who've made it. I guess, you know, there's like over the years, you've, as you're saying, you participate in a lot of film festivals and stuff. What kind of memorable moments are the ones that have stuck with you that have been like, yes, I'm on the right path, I'm going to continue on doing this?
I think when I made a film called Kevin Is back in 2009, and it was when Facebook was starting, and it was all about, you know, people's kind of over-reliance on technology. And it was what happens if Facebook was real in life. You know, someone would poke you. Remember, you could poke someone on Facebook. And that did really well. And it got in Peninsula Film Festival down in Dromana, which is run by Steve Bastoni. And I remember him calling me up and saying, got in. And I just remember, you know, got teary, you know. It was just like, wow. And seeing that on the big screen, front of so many people, and I thought, and then laughing, you know, and it was like, wow, that's what I love, just the entertainment and putting a smile on someone's face. Because over the years, you begin to question, what the fuck am I doing? I'm broke. I was just in a relationship, you know, for a couple of months, and with a girl who just could not understand why I kept doing this and, you know, sacrificing my time and energy and, you know, financially, emotionally, everything. And I would always go back to this quote by David Acker. Let me read you this, because it's this is for all creatives. This quote has always, if I think, what the hell am I doing, you know, time to quit, I would read this and it would push me forward. Artists are some of the most driven, courageous people on the face of the earth. They deal with more day-to-day rejection in 1 year than most people do in a lifetime. Every day, artists face the financial challenge of living a freelance lifestyle, the disrespect of people who think they should get real jobs, and their own fear that they'll never work again. Every day, they have to ignore the possibility that the vision they have dedicated their lives to is a pipe dream. With every role, they stretch themselves emotionally and physically, risking criticism and judgment. With every passing year, many of them watch as the other people their age achieve the predictable milestones in normal life, the car, the family, the house, the nest egg. Why? Because artists are willing to give their entire lives to a moment, to that line, that laugh, that gesture, that interpretation that will stir the audience's soul. Artists are beings who have tasted life's nectar in that crystal moment when they poured out their creative spirit and touched another's heart. In that instant, they were as close to magic, God, and perfection as anyone could ever be. And in their own hearts, they know that to dedicate oneself to that moment is worth 1,000 lifetimes. Yeah, so I always go back to that, you know, when I go, what the hell am I doing? I remember doing a short film called Retirement in 2017. I go, I really think this will be my last one. Maybe I should really give it up and retire. And I just remember a friend of mine saying, no, when you're ready to give up, you know, it's the next one that really propels you. And I did a film called The Grand Scheme, which is a film within a film within a film within a film. And every stage is a different stage in life. And I started writing in 1995, and I just developed over the years, and I did really well at festivals, and I couldn't be more proud. And then, you know, at the start of COVID, I thought, I'm going to do a feature. This is the time. I mean, it probably wasn't the best time, but it was the best time. I could either watch everything on Netflix, Andrew.
Yeah.
Oh, which I kind of did a little bit. There was Tiger King, all that sort of stuff. But I would always write, and every day, and we cast it in COVID, and you know, a lot of other people that were home alone, you know, we got them together. We did Zoom calls, and basically Resonance is about connection. When you see Charlie at the start, she's dead inside. She's like a zombie. She begins to connect with these people on her journey, brings life back in her. And then we find out what happened. And it's all about, I guess, forgiving yourself, and which I guess she does at the end. But I'm trying to say stuff that's not going to give anything away. I'm trying to be careful.
We'll talk about Resonance in a moment, but I'm curious, like, throughout the years, one of the things that I know is a real difficult thing for creative folks is the continuation of wanting to continue doing what you're doing comes with a lot of self-doubt as well. Like, should I still be doing it? Am I able to continue doing it? And as you're saying, with retirement, you go, maybe this is my last one. How do you manage the self-doubt, the questioning of being able to continue on, that kind of stuff?
I think everyone goes through those days, and then I don't know, you start talking to someone, and like after we're developing a short film. I haven't told anyone the title, but I might as well. It's called Goldilocks versus the Three Bears, a courtroom drama. Goldilocks is suing the Three Bears. And yeah, it's really good. And I was talking to a friend about it, and I'm going, oh, do I do this? You know, I've got no money. I've got nothing. I've got to get a job. And then I started telling her about I think we're on the fifth draft at the moment. And I'm telling her, I'm going, holy shit, this is going to be really good. You know, and it gives you all that energy back. And then I start, you know, speaking to a few friends, and I just go, okay, we're doing this. And I tell them what it's about, and they get excited. You know, so it's driving forward. That's what you got to do. You just got to keep moving forward. But of course, there's always going to be self-doubt with anything in life. But you just got to, like I said, with that quote, you know, you've got to have that thing that kind of like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing it. You know, because basically I don't have a choice. I don't, you know, and a lot of creatives don't. They just have to. Like I wish I had the family and the white picket fence, and you know, and not have to worry about, you know, when the like rent, you know, food and stuff. And I tell you, like sometimes it's just gotten dire where it's like, shit, rent. What am I going to do? You know, and it happens. You know, I've had to sell a lot of stuff, but I don't regret a thing. My 50th, we had a speech, and one of my friends said, you've done so many films, you put your heart and soul into it. And, you know, I really reflected and just thought, yeah. And it's not just me, so many people and so much talent in this country. And
it's one of the things I want to talk about is the comedy and horror aspect too, which is in its own way, quite a marketable thing, right? And it's almost a very easy entry point to getting not just national attention, but more international attention, because I think certainly globally, horror films are a lot more accepting internationally. They don't care what it sounds like. They don't care where it's coming from. They just want to have a good time and see a bit of blood and violence and have a good time, right? And that means that horror films and horror comedies in particular really have legs going internationally. Was that something that you thought of with Residence as you were making it?
As we were going along and doing our research, yes. I mean, I there's no zombie films in Australia, you know, and there wasn't much comedy. And I thought, this is great. And not only was I going to do a horror comedy, I was going to mix two horror subgenres, the slasher, so I love the Friday the 13th films, and you know, and zombies, and mix it together, and basically mix a lot of genres together, stir it in a big pot, see what we got, you know, and just to cater for everyone's taste. But I just, we've been to already 10 distribution companies already, and they've all knocked us back, and I'm going, it's already won 7 awards. you know, and it's, and they're going, oh, we just don't think this is right for us. I'm going, what are you talking about? What do you want? Oh, you want American productions. You know, it's, but we've shown it twice and it's killed in a big, you know, audience. It's done so well. And like when we had the cast and crew screening last August, 450 people there at the Capitol in Melbourne. And it was, I'm standing, I can't sit. I'm watching the audience, not the screen. And I'm emotional, you know. So many years of trying to get this to the screen and just hearing, going, oh, they laughed at Harry's joke, you know, they loved Jeanette. Oh, my God, great, they loved Ruby, you know. And I got so much talent in that film, which these are incredible performances that the girls did and Kim Valentine, and even having a little cameo from Ian Smith, which is, he's just a sweetheart, that man. And
well, I was going to ask you about it. Let's talk about Ian briefly, because he's, you know, national legend. What's it like being able to bring somebody who has an iconic face into something, and then I guess a spoiler alert, but you know, something fairly intense happens, but there's almost this subversive fun to being able to see him in that way. And I guess, like, I think of something like Body Melt way back in the early 90s, also had, you know, Neighbours, Crew and stuff, these iconic faces getting terrible things happening to them.
I spoke horror. Like?
And it's nice. But what's it like working with somebody like Ian and being able to bring that kind of talent to a crew, a cast and crew that is a lot of, you know, fresh talent, I guess is the best way of putting it?
Well, his scene, we shot for one day. We built that set. So when he came on, he was like, wow. But the first day I met him, I went to his place and I thought it'd be like 15 minutes, go through the script. I was sitting with him for about 5 to 6 hours talking about theatre. You know, everyone's got a theatre. So I've done 50 productions. So everyone's got a story, you know. Oh, an old lady in the third row died. You know, that's kind of one of mine. But it's, he was just so generous with his time, but it wasn't all about him. He'd be asking me a million questions, and he was a writer as well when he did Prisoner. And then he went even further back, and I just kept asking questions. He's just an absolute sweetheart. And he loved him. And I told him what I was doing, that, you know, all my money was going into this. And I said, how much would you like? You know, he goes, I'm not taking a cent from you. I know what you're doing and I love this, you know, and he was just totally on board. And I cannot say enough good things about that man, but he just, even on set, the collaboration, and that's what filmmaking's all about. I get some actors that come on and think it's all about them, but it ain't, you know, filmmaking is collaboration. It ain't my film. It's our film. You know, some people forget that. I can't do it with them, you know. People supporting me. I've got people that I bounce ideas off to. You know, I need those people. But Ian came in, he had a ball, and he was just very gracious. I wish, and even Kim Valentine, you know, she was just so sweet. She teaches at TAFTA, the Australian Film and, you know, Television Academy. And she goes, why don't I bring some of my students in? I'm going, hell yeah, let's do that. You know, we can have them background actors, and I never say extras, they're background actors or acting, you know, and I direct them as well. And I always tell everyone on my set, the background actor is just as important as the lead actor, you know, and I make sure all my PAs know all the background actors' names as well. That's important. You know, there's nothing better. I've done some commercials before, many, many years ago, where you come on set and you're treated like absolute shit. You know, and I thought, I'm never fucking going to do that. I want people to walk away going, what a great day. You know, and all those background actors came to the set, and I made sure when they came to the premiere last year, hello, Susan, you know, hello, Michael, hello, you know, oh, you remember my name? Of course I bloody do. You're in residence, you know, and even the credits, I put all the background actors' names in there, you know, it's just, it's, you know, the movie's about connection, and I think it's, life's about connecting, so, yeah.
But it also gives them the experience of being on a set, right? And it gives them something to hold on to be able to say, I was in a movie. And then, you know, not only building up a showreel, but also, you know, building up the experience. And I think that's one of the things that is often maybe not forgotten, because I think it is well and truly remembered. But it's, as, you know, we've heard with a story like Within, but I think that it's not talked about enough that the role that independent films have in film production globally, it's not just a training ground, but it's also a place that real stories can be told. And I'm curious then for you as an independent filmmaker, how the mindset of dealing with being an independent filmmaker versus the, you know, screen funded bodies, do you see that the difference? Is there a distinct divide between the two?
Look, I used to try and get funding off, you know, Film Victoria and Screen Australia, and I gave up. And I've got a big body of work behind me. I've got a shitload of awards, but I actually don't mind what I do. It means I'm not sort of, I don't get phone calls from people going, let's change the ending. You know, let's, you know, put another actor in there. They're not a big name. I said, it's about the character. It's about, you know, I don't know, man, this country, I would love it if it was like the 90s again. And there was just, I've met so many great directors. So many great directors that if they're given the chance, they could create an absolute incredible film, you know, next Stephen Elliott or Jesus, Baz Luhrmann, you know, just there's all those out there in Australia. But there's just, is this the only way these films are going to get done for just, you know, a relative? It's kind of like The Room, you know, Tommy Wiseau found an old lady, you know, with a shitload of money, and I might just hang out at retirement villages and, you know, and knock on doors and stuff. But I've done that. We tried everything, Kickstarter, you know, I even tried an OnlyFans page. It's just, I didn't get any members, but it was, I've tried everything. I'm not kidding you. You know, all legal.
Why has this happened, and will we be all right? Good question. Well, it happened because it happened. We will be all right.
Everybody get back!
That the adult parasite resides in the partially regenerated brain of the zombie and it orders it to chase and bite humans and blah, 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 blah.
Not everyone turns.
You're going to turn. She's right. Everyone turns.
These dead bodies are being awakened.
It's exciting.
No, it's not.
Some guy bit me.
If you want to bite into something, why not bite into our delicious koala pizza?
I call them biteys. Because they bite, right?
Right, because they bite.
If in this house you wish to come in first, we must know you will not eat our skin.
That's lovely.
I'm a milf. There's not many of us left.
So what did you think of Residents?
I enjoyed it. As you're saying, it's about community, right? There's kind of films that you'd almost expect to see from England in a way, like with the vignettes of comedy moments and things like that, and just having this traveling character going from one comedy moment to the next, or one violent moment to the next, and just going, oh my gosh, how do I get out of this? And there is this almost like doom level of being like, shit, this is just spiraling out of control, there's no hope. And that's kind of the point. Like I like the kind of the passages of being able to go into the past and being like getting to see what people were like before everything went to shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe you can talk about this a bit more, but this sense of trying to understand the present by going, well, is there any hope? Is what we're currently doing of this kind of mindless corporate driven stuff, whether it be in a warehouse, whether it be in, you know, an office space or whether it be trying to sell stuff, what's the end goal of it, right? And to me, there is this sense of going, you know, we can continue on doing this, but we're just going to end up as kind of mindless zombies who go through the motions. Is that kind of what you were aiming to explore in some way through Residence?
I guess it all started, like, I wanted to, it started as a short film where it was just the bunker at the start. You know, that's what it all was. And I just, so Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch. They ride into town to do a bank robbery, and they've got heaps of guys in there. They've got mates on the roof, and, you know, and then all of a sudden it turns to shit, and I think four or five of them escape. That's kind of what I wanted, you know. It's just you meet all these characters at the start. You kind of get to know them a little bit, and it's like, okay, where are we going with this? And all of a sudden all hell breaks loose, and I wanted, when that title comes up for Resonance, people go, what the fuck just happened? I wanted that. Where are these going now? And then you start to get to meet Charlie and the child. You know, and I wanted that. And I also love the wild geese. Goddamn, Richard Burton, Roger Moore, Richard Harris. You know, and I love that at the start. And you get to meet all these people at the end. Almost all of them die, you know. And I love going, oh, I love that character, that character, that character, you know. And then... And I just wanted to fill Residence with all these interesting characters along the way, where it was kind of warranted for repeat viewings, where you're going, who was that character there? Okay, let's find out a little bit about him. I really chucked a lot of characters in there. I knew there was a lot more because I wrote about 36 drafts. You know, I thought if I'm putting my money into this, I want to make sure that every line, you know, works. Every joke lands, you know.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you have a role in a lot of what you've done as an actor. You wear multiple different hats as well. And I imagine that's probably the same for a lot of the crew. I imagine some of the cast are probably doing stuff off camera as well. Is that the case?
Yeah. Like, well, I was going to have Ryan Maloney, Toadie, in that role, and I cast him. We had this massive read-through many years ago. But there was, I don't know, Jesus Christ, 60 people around this huge table reading it. And we had T-shirts done up and, you know, we highlighted their part on the script. And it was a great day. It was a great day. We had the narrator and, you know, and as we were going along, at the start, the bunker would have, like, bunker noises and everything. And then they were in the countryside. I'd make sure there was, it was a good day. But Ryan couldn't do it, and I tried to get another actor in it, Scott Major. He couldn't do it either. And at the end, someone just said, you're going to have to jump in and do it. And I go, really, it's a big role. But then on that day when we started filming that courtyard scene, I was at 3 a.m. I was up going, okay, I can change that line. Okay. And, you know, really worked on it and just, I knew it was going to be a headache for the editor because I had lived a shitload. Yeah, it went for a while, you know. But I look back on that and I'm going, I'm glad I did it because I really enjoyed it. It was fun just being an idiot.
Throughout the creative process, like, it's a feature film, was there any point that you went, maybe this could be a series or...
Yes.
Like, yep.
Yeah. So those flashbacks, I thought if Resonance becomes a cult hit or something, I've already written like a 10-part series of some of those actors are in it, you know, a flashback of where they were before. That's already written. Residence 2, I've already done two drafts on that. So I don't stop. You know, it's just, I'll write all the time. And my brain's just wired that way every now and then. That's why I go for my walks, Andrew. Just go, oh, shit, yeah, and listen to some classical.
Do the voice recording stuff?
Sometimes when I'm in the car, I'll just press that and I'll just let it run. And usually the first 5 minutes is shit. But then you find these bits of gold in there, you know. And with Residence, those scenes, I'd be just going through it in the car, just reading it. And I go, oh, fuck yeah, that works so much better. And I treated every scene as its own movie, you know, with an act one, act two, act three, you know. And yeah, anyway, I love it. I love the music. Hugh Wagner's music is just, I said, just go big. Make it epic. It's a low indie budget film. Let's make it epic with the music. Yeah, the grade's great. I'm very, very proud of it. I think we get the trailer on Friday, and then we'll go to a few more distribution companies. And if not, I'm hoping they can look at it and go, okay, we'll go to zombie horror. You know, let's get a an audience in to actually have a look at it. Because anyway,
that's the other aspect that I kind of want to talk about, is the hard work of trying to get to an audience, right? Because independent films, you are effectively, whenever you get one off the ground, whether it be a short or a feature, you need to effectively become a small business, you know, creating something. You've got your product. How do you get it out? And I hate using that word product, but I don't mean it in that sense. But I mean in the sense that you're building something and you need to build awareness for it. So the process of doing that, it's a time cost, but then it's a financial cost too. And then there's the emotional, mental cost as well, when you get either the, you know, rejection letters, or you sometimes don't even hear anything, or you get into the right festival, but it's like, oh, is this the right move, or stuff like that. So how do you process trying to get your film out there into the world? How do you manage that?
So I've got quite a few friends in the industry who are independent filmmakers, and I've caught up with them over the past year and just said, look, how did you do it? How did you get your film on stand? You know, so it's just talking to like-minded people and, you know, and sharing. Like, did you see The Agian? It was one of the 19 indie films.
Yeah, I haven't, no, because I had a feeling it would be one of the films that might be getting some kind of release this year, or some kind of...
I think February, but he's an absolute sweetheart. So we've shared, like I've said, okay, here's all, you know, these are the media links, you should contact them, and, you know, and he's done the same for me. So that's what we need, indie filmmakers just going, this is what I've got. Okay, this is what I've got, you know. So I appreciate him. And Adam LaRosa. Adam LaRosa is a producer on The Cost, on Stan, and he's just done so much, that man. He was also Eric the Bald in Residence.
So another kind of multi-talented person, yes.
Yeah. He's an absolute sweetheart. It's hard because there are so many rejection letters, and I don't understand why. It's just, I guess it's not what, you know, it's who, you know. But I don't know. Look, I believe in this film. I know that once it gets out there, it'll do really well. Like I said, it's won, just, we just won another couple of awards the other day, like Best Director and Best Indie Film. So I know that, you know, once it gets into these festivals, you know, I reckon it'll take off. But if not, then I'll just keep pushing it, you know, and pushing it, you know, and keep making the films, and, you know, just keep going until that lucky break, I guess. I guess making the film, I started off putting all this money into it, thinking that, I don't know, halfway through it, I'll get these, you know, white lights, and I go, my God, and this guy will come in and go, here's a suitcase full of money, all right? Don't worry about it. Just keep going. You'll be all right. But that's not the case. But yeah, I don't know. Look, I think I just got to keep pushing forward. And it's a lot, because I'm doing 99% of the stuff by myself. So I'm writing and I'm looking at that, and I'm researching places where I can send it. And yeah, it's not easy, man. It really is. You don't have a team.
That's what I'm saying. It's like running a small business, because you are effectively having to do, you know, you're wearing multiple different hats of trying to get stuff done, trying to get it out into the world. It's really, really very difficult. When I speak to people every year, like, and I do my end of year list, and I say, oh, look, I watched 110 feature films that were made in Australia or released in Australia in the past year. They go, how is there 110 Australian films released, or, you know, existing or whatever in Australia? Like, I thought we only had one or two films. And it's like, no, there's there is a vibrant industry at work. It exists. It just needs people to be able to be aware that it exists, right?
I've spoken to so many people that, you know, have cinemas and stuff, and, oh, we believe in indie films and stuff. And I go, really? Everyone's full of shit. There is so many great Australian films out there. And I watched, I think, of the 19 indie films on the Actor TV. I think I saw 15, you know, and there's some great stuff there. Like, really, really good. And I love that. I love that people have just gone, okay, you know what? I'm going into this. I'm going to make a film, and there's a 99% chance I won't make my money back. But I don't want to die going, why didn't I? And I think that's what drove me, actually. Look, I grew up on Jerry Lewis, Dean Martin films, and a lot of, you know, Two Ronnies, and, you know, a lot of The Goodies and Monty Python. And I grew up with that humour, and I've done, you know, I play guitar in a comedic band, you know, and it's just making people smile. That's my drive. My bass player and I play these, you know, rude songs, but I remember, you know, a guy coming up and saying, I was having the worst day. I was having the worst day, and you just put a massive smile on my face. Making that difference, and, you know, and as with film as well, I think that, you know, during these tough times with everything just on the rise, it's hard for a lot of people. To put a smile on someone's face is just, you know, it's a gift. And, you know, I'm watching all these films, indie films, there's just, I smile all the way through it going, they all should get a cinema release somewhere. You know, I know that's easier said than done, and, you know, it's, but I don't know how. I don't know how, you know, it's, no one goes to the cinema anymore. You know, it's streaming sort of has taken over. I remember growing up going, all I want is to, you know, go and see, have my film, you know, on the big screen. But now it's kind of changed, and it's, if it got onto streaming, if it got onto Stan, then that'd be incredible. And I just, yeah.
It's interesting you talk about streaming, and it's like there was an article at the end of last year about Netflix, I think it was, who was really pushing creative people to make sure that the stuff that they're writing and they're shooting is not too visually driven, that it's got to be very dialogue driven, it's very explanatory, because they want to try and increase the amount of shows or films that are passive entertainment. And I think that's what's the problem nowadays, is trying to fight the passive entertainment of trying to deal with people, you know, going, I've got my phone, I've got my tablet, I've got my TV on, I've got a podcast going, or stuff like that, you know, having four or five different things going at once and trying to take it all in, but you're only listening to a small little bit of it. And that's the thing that I think that's the biggest competition, is attention, right? There is so much out there, and it's so hard to try and grab somebody's attention. And time is such a difficult thing to be able to say, give me 2 hours of your time. Let me show you a story. That kind of thing. And people go, oh, 2 hours. I don't know. That's really hard. And yet they'll watch they'll binge a whole series, right? But they're not binging a whole series because they're sitting there and the series is on and they're on Facebook or whatever. And so that's the problem, is the attention. You know, we could talk about how Australian films get into cinemas and all this kind of stuff, and that's a whole thing in itself where it's like, you could self do it, you can rent out cinemas. You know, I've talked to a bunch of filmmakers who have gone across Australia, rented out cinemas in all the capital cities, gone to regional towns and stuff. Like Aaron Wilson with his film Little Tornadoes a few years ago, he did exactly that. He drove across Australia, went to regional towns, basically rented out as many of the places as he could, did Q&As.
Well, I mean, there was a film called Streets of Colour that was up for, yeah, so Ronnie, the director on that, he took it everywhere. And hats off to him. you know, and he did well with it. But it's, I mean, is that the way, you know, for an indie filmmaker to go? Is that the path?
Is this your child? No, but she's my responsibility.
She has type 1 diabetes.
I'll get you some recipe. I'll get you some medicine.
The location is Olden Days Castle.
Sewell, the king.
Have you been bitten?
Well, I have. By the fun bug.
You're not just giving actors the chance to be able to have, you know, a 5-minute section in a film to be able to explore a character, build it up and be something, but it's about the community connection and the delight of being able to explore and engage with that. And it's clear, like, you know, you've been doing it for 20 years. It means a lot, you know. It's huge. Well, yeah. Probably longer than 20 years, right?
It's 30.
Yeah.
Maybe 30. Since 91, I guess, I made my first short.
There you go, right? And yeah. You continue going.
But it is a community. And that's what I try and create, Andrew, on every set. It's just, I make sure everyone understands that we're family, we're creating something special here, and you're just supporting us, everyone else. And I wish I could pay everyone, you know, the right amount of money. It's not about that. You know, I didn't start making this film to go, I'm going to make $1 million. I guess why I did it was like, in my head was like, I want to make a film, and that was kind of, you know, and that's where I got to. Because if I thought I want to make $1 million, that was never going to happen, you know. And I guess people have got different reasons why they put their heart and soul into something, everything into it. Actually, you know, it's emotional, you know, financial. I got nothing. My credit card's maxed. Every month, it's like, okay, I put $500 onto it just to, you know. But I don't know. I'm happy. I've got a 14-year-old daughter who lives in Brisbane, and I was speaking to her last night about it, and she was just asking why I do it. And I'm going, and she's a creative herself. She's incredible. But I said, when you believe in something so strong, you find a way. And if you have to work in factories and clean toilets and everything, then you do it. And I never complained or anything. You know, I wouldn't change it. I love it. I'm hoping that I can do Resonance 2, which has got the tagline, the body count will be even higher. But just to give more actors an opportunity in that, you know, up-and-comers, and just so they can share the magic as well. And because, like, when I saw Star Wars for the first time, it was that magic. It was like, wow, that's incredible. When I made that first film I did in 91 at the school, I was like, wow, you know, everyone loved it and laughed and everything, and it was terrible. And it was shot on VHS, and, you know, but I look back on it, and it's, you can't really see it anymore, but it's, you know, there was love already there. And, I'm thankful for a lot of things, Andrew. And, you know, I guess this is my life, and majority of people that you interview, I know they're the same. You know, they do it because they have to, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's something that's burning inside you. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't go back.
Thanks for listening to this interview with Matt Merrims. For everything related to The Curb, visit thecurb.com.au. I'll see you on the next one.